Medieval History, 7th grade, May 18th through May 22nd, Review Week, Thursday, May 21st, History Unit, Semester Review, Lesson 4, The Investiture Controversy, Socratic Guiding Question. What are the dangers of church leaders having a lot of wealth and or secular power? What are the dangers of secular leaders, kings and emperors, having tremendous influence in the church? Be able to do this by the end of this lesson. Explain whether the motivations of Pope Gregory VII and King Henry IV were primarily religious, secular, or some combination of the two. Introduction. If you can't remember the answers to the questions below, you can find the answers in the first paragraph on the next page. Number 1. Look at the picture on page 13. What event is being depicted? Number 2, why was that event significant? Yesterday we were reminded about the many good things that the unity of church and state allowed for Charlemagne to do. Today we will turn to some of the dangers that can result from a unified church and state. With so much support from the state, some positions of authority in the church became positions of tremendous political power and landholding. Indeed, the bishops in Germany became much like feudal lords with allegiance to the king. As such, the king wanted to be allowed to appoint his feudal lord bishops. While the church had at times allowed for secular leaders to influence the choice of bishops, as in the case of Charlemagne, the church had always maintained that it was the pope or other bishops who ultimately had the right to appoint bishops. This led to the showdown between Pope Gregory VII and King, i.e. Holy Roman Emperor, Henry IV, in which the pope demanded the king to stop appointing bishops. The king refused and as a result was excommunicated by the pope in 1076. In response, the king walked from Germany down to northern Italy during winter in penance, and waited barefoot in the snow for 3 days, in order for the Pope to receive him back into communion with the Church, and in the hope of regaining his kingdom. This event reveals how politically powerful the Church, and especially the Pope, had become. Our focus for this lesson will be the motivations of King Henry IV and Pope Gregory VII. Penance at Canossa. Because Pope Gregory VII excommunicated Henry IV was faced with the real possibility that he would be deposed in just a few months by the Saxon princes who used Henry's excommunication as a reason to revolt. With little support in Germany, Henry decided on a bold move. He would go to Italy as penance, so that the Pope would release him from his excommunication. While most of the passes over the Alps were guarded by his opponents, he found one who could be bribed enough for him to be allowed through. In December, with an entourage of only about 50 people, including his wife and infant son, Henry began his trek southwards. Chroniclers report that the winter of 1076-77 was one of the harshest they had ever seen, and Henry had to cross the formidable Swiss Alps. Despite such difficulty, the crossing was accomplished. News soon spread of his arrival in Italy, and the Pope feared that he might be coming to capture him, or do even worse. The Emperor had many supporters among the Italian nobility, enough to raise an army. Countess Matilda took Gregory to her castle at Canossa, where they waited to see what Henry was planning. On January 25th, 1077, with a blizzard raging, Henry arrived at the gates of Canossa. Here is Gregory's own account, written just weeks after, of what happened. Finally, he came in person to Canossa, where we were staying, bringing with him only a small retinue and manifesting no hostile intentions. Once arrived, he presented himself at the gate of the castle, barefoot and clad only in wretched woolen garments, beseeching us with tears to grant him absolution and forgiveness. This he continued to do for 3 days, until all those about us were moved to compassion at his plight, and interceded for him with tears and prayers. Indeed, they marveled at our hardness of heart. some even complaining that our action savored rather of heartless tyranny than of chastening severity. At length his persistent declarations of repentance and the supplications of all who were there with us overcame our reluctance, and we removed the excommunication from him and received him again into the bosom of the Holy Mother Church. Lampert of Hersfield's version is very similar. His whole entourage was left outside, and he himself, laying aside his royal garb, with nothing in his appearance, with no display or splendor, with bare feet, he remained fasting from morning to evening, waiting for the judgment of the Roman pontiff. He did this on the second day and on the third day. At last, on the fourth day, he was allowed to come into the Pope's presence, and after many arguments and counter-arguments, he was finally absolved from excommunication. The account written by a supporter of Countess Matilda has her playing more of a central role in the affair, acting as the key intermediary. At one point, the emperor begs her, "If you do not help me in this moment, I cannot fight any more, because the Pope has condemned me. O valiant cousin, make him bless me. Go." Before being absolved, Henry had to promise Gregory that he would behave better, and gave the following oath: "I, Henry, king, promise to satisfy the grievances which my archbishops, bishops, dukes, counts, and other princes of Germany or their followers may have against me, within the time set by Pope Gregory and in accordance with his conditions. If I am prevented by any sufficient cause from doing this within that time, I will do it as soon after that as I may. Further, if Pope Gregory shall desire to visit Germany or any other land on his journey thither, his sojourn there, and his return thence, he shall not be molested or placed in danger of captivity by me or by anyone whom I can control. This shall apply to his escort and retinue, and to all who come and go in his service. Moreover, I will neither enter into any plan for hindering or molesting him, but will aid him in good faith and to the best of my ability, if anyone else opposes him." Once that was done, the Pope held a mass and gave communion to Henry. Afterwards they had dinner, and according to another chronicler, the emperor was in such a bad mood he did not touch his food, but instead spent his time grinding his fingernails into the wooden table. With a final blessing from Gregory, Henry departed Canossa and headed back to his supporters. Almost as soon as the event happened, people were debating what was the real significance of the walk to Canossa. Had Henry humiliated himself and become subservient to the papacy? Or was he deft enough that he framed the issue around his personal repentance, and the situation had no bearing on his right to kingship? In any case, the lifting of the excommunication gave Henry some room to work and maneuver politically and militarily. He and his royal supporters had been absolved, and could now openly fight for his crown with the rebellious factions, effectively taking away their justification for fighting. If he was back in good graces with God, via the blessing of the Pope, then there was no more reason for the revolt of the Saxon princes. Meanwhile, the Pope tried to explain that just because he absolved Henry, that did not mean he was still allowing him to be emperor. Within 3 years, the emperor and the Pope were fighting again, with Gregory excommunicating Henry for a second time. However, by this time, the bitterness between the two men had only grown, and Henry would not return to seek forgiveness. Instead, both sides fought to depose each other, and war would be waged in both Germany and Italy. The fighting over the investiture controversy would continue long after both Gregory and Henry were dead. The Church eventually secured the right of appointing bishops at the Concordat of Worms in 1122. A clear insight into the mindset of Gregory is shown in his letter to Hugo, the abbot of Cluny, in 1075. "If it were possible, I should greatly desire you to understand fully what anxiety oppresses me, what toil renewed day by day wearies and disturbs me by its increasing burden, so that your brotherly sympathy might incline you toward me and cause you to pour out your here in floods of tears before God. That Jesus, the man of poverty, through whom all things were made, and who is ruler over all, might stretch forth his hand and deliver me from my misery with his mercy. I scarce find any bishops who live or who were ordained according to law and who govern Christian people in the love of Christ and not for worldly ambition. And among secular princes I find none who prefer the honor of God to their own or righteousness to gain. I find myself so weighed down by the burden of my own actions that I have no hope of salvation save only in the mercy of Christ. Number 1. Compare and contrast the motivations of Gregory the VII and Henry the IV. Were their motivations primarily religious, secular, or some combination of the two? This concludes the material for Thursday, May 21st.